Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Widow's Vow, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1: The Funeral Lies. I never believed in ghosts. Not the kind that haunt the living, anyway. But as I stood at my husband's gravesite, surrounded by mourners draped in black, I realized something. Some ghosts don't need white sheets or flickering lights to make their presence known. Some ghosts linger in the minds of the people they leave behind, whispering questions that refuse to die. And Marcus Caldwell was one of those ghosts. A preacher was speaking. I wasn't listening. His voice was a steady hum, blending into the background noise of shuffling feet and hushed sniffles. He spoke of grief, of loss, of how Marcus was a dedicated detective, a devoted husband. A good man. I almost laughed. Instead, I kept my face blank, a mask of quiet sorrow, and stared at the casket. The polished wood reflected the overcast sky, the dull gray of an afternoon that refused to give me sun. Marcus would have hated this. He never liked being the center of attention, never liked people fussing over him. I imagined him standing next to me, hands shoved into his pockets, rolling his eyes at all the weeping faces. But Marcus wasn't standing next to me. He was 6 feet below, a bullet hole in his head. And I was the only one who knew the truth. They told me it was a suicide. That my husband had cracked under pressure, had taken his service weapon, and ended his own life in our garage. That he had struggled, that he had been distant, that he just couldn't handle it anymore. I nodded when they told me. I kept my face still, my expression unreadable. Because I knew they were lying. Marcus wasn't weak. He wasn't broken. And he sure as hell didn't kill himself. I clutched the funeral program tighter in my hands, the glossy paper wrinkling under my grip. His name was printed in bold lettering, Detective Marcus Caldwell, beloved husband, son, and friend. Beneath it was a smiling picture of him in his uniform. He looked normal. Strong. Unshaken. I knew better. The last time I had seen Marcus alive, something was off. He had been distracted, his mind somewhere else. At first, I thought it was work. Marcus had always been dedicated to his job, sometimes to a fault. But this was different. He had been hiding something. I felt it in the way he avoided my eyes, in the way his phone never left his pocket, in the tension that curled his shoulders whenever he thought I wasn't watching. I should have confronted him. I should have demanded answers. But I didn't. And now it was too late. I swallowed hard, forcing myself to look up as the preacher finished his speech. The crowd murmured their final amens, and one by one, people stepped forward, tossing dirt into the grave. "Such a tragedy," someone whispered behind me. "He was such a good man," another voice said. "Poor thing," an older woman sighed. "She's too young to be a widow." I clenched my jaw and stepped forward. The dirt was cool in my hands, soft and damp from last night's rain. I let it slip through my fingers, the small grains tumbling onto the casket with a dull thud. I should have said something then. A final goodbye. A prayer. But the only words that came to mind were ones Marcus wouldn't have wanted to hear. So I turned and walked away. The House of Ghosts. I didn't go to the reception. Instead, I drove home, the silence in the car stretching thick around me. The roads were nearly empty, the city subdued under the weight of gray clouds. Our house was just as we had left it, a two-story brick home with white shutters and a red front door. Cozy. Perfect. A place meant for growing old together. I unlocked the door and stepped inside. The scent of Marcus's cologne still lingered in the air, mixing with the faint trace of coffee and wood polish. The house felt still, like it was holding its breath, like it knew something was missing. I dropped my keys onto the table and made my way to the kitchen. I hadn't eaten all day. My stomach was empty, a hollow pit that refused to register hunger. I grabbed a bottle of whiskey instead. Pouring a generous amount into a glass, I leaned against the counter and took a sip. The burn was instant, searing down my throat, numbing the edges of my thoughts. I needed to clear my head. I needed to figure out what the hell happened to my husband. Because Marcus didn't just die, he was taken. And I was going to find out why. I reached for my phone, scrolling through my contacts until I found the number I needed. The line rang twice before a voice answered. "Detective Owens," the man said. I took a slow breath. "It's me." There was a pause. "Shit. Claire." His voice softened. "I'm so sorry." I ignored the sympathy. "I need to see the case file." Silence. Then, "Claire. I know it wasn't a suicide." I cut him off, my grip tightening around the phone. "I need that file." Owens exhaled sharply. "You don't want to do this. Give me the file, Owens." Another pause. Then finally, "Meet me in an hour." The truth I wasn't ready for. The precinct was quieter than usual. I walked through the halls, my heels clicking against the polished floors. The air smelled of stale coffee and paperwork, the usual scent of bureaucracy and bullshit. Owens was waiting for me in his office. He looked older, more tired than the last time I had seen him. He gestured for me to sit, but I remained standing. "Claire! The file," I said. His jaw tensed, but he reached into his drawer and pulled out a folder. He hesitated before sliding it across the desk. "This doesn't change anything." I picked up the folder, flipping it open. The first page was the autopsy report. I skimmed over the details. Gunshot wound to the head, close range, no signs of struggle. Then I saw the toxicology report. And my blood ran cold. Traces of barbiturates. I looked up sharply. He was drugged. Owens rubbed a hand over his face. "It's possible." "Possible?" My voice rose. "You think he dosed himself before putting a bullet in his head?" He sighed. "Look, Claire, Marcus was in deep. I don't know everything, but I know he was investigating something off the books. Something big. Maybe he got caught up in something he couldn't handle." I clenched my fists. "He was murdered." Owens didn't argue. Instead, he leaned forward, lowering his voice. "Claire, if Marcus was looking into something, that means there's a trail. And if there's a trail, whoever did this will know you're following it." I closed the folder, my decision already made. "Let them come." A name that made my blood run cold. I went home that night and tore apart Marcus's office. It took me hours searching through every drawer, every notebook, every file. But I found it, tucked inside the lining of his leather jacket. A burner phone. I turned it on, my heart pounding. The messages were still there. And one name appeared over and over again. Jada Monroe. My breath caught. Jada Monroe wasn't just some woman. She was a goddamn queenpin. And she had been sleeping with my husband. That was the moment I knew. Marcus didn't kill himself. He was silenced. And I was going to make sure Jada Monroe paid for it in blood. Chapter 2, The Setup. The weight of my husband's betrayal hadn't fully settled in. Not yet. Maybe it was because I was still running on adrenaline. Maybe it was because the grief hadn't hit me the way it was supposed to. Or maybe it was because my grief wasn't for Marcus at all. It was for the woman I had been before I found out the truth. Before I found out that Marcus was sleeping with a criminal. Before I found out that the man I had loved, the man I had built a life with, was nothing more than a liar who thought he could keep his secrets buried forever. The funeral was over. The well-wishers had gone home. The house was quiet, except for the sound of the rain tapping against the window. And I sat on the living room floor, staring at the burner phone in my hands, scrolling through messages that made my stomach churn. Jada Monroe. Her name was everywhere. Marcus had been texting her for months. At first, the messages were subtle, coded words, careful language. But as time passed, they became more reckless. "Miss me, baby? You know I do. When's your next visit? Whenever you tell me to come." And then the ones that made my blood turn to ice. "Don't let anyone find out about us. You worry too much. I have everything under control. If this ever gets out, it could ruin me." I felt sick, because the only thing that had been ruined was my life. And Marcus had done it willingly. I clenched the phone so tightly my fingers ached. I could have thrown it across the room. I could have smashed it against the wall, shattered it into a million pieces the way Marcus had shattered my trust. But I didn't, because I needed it. I needed the proof. I needed to know everything. And most importantly, I needed to get close to Jada Monroe. The first move, getting close to a woman like Jada wasn't easy. She wasn't just some random gangster. She was the boss. A woman who controlled the drug trade, the underground clubs, the illegal arms deals running through the city. She was ruthless, intelligent, deadly, and she had been fucking my husband. I wanted to put a bullet in her head, but revenge required patience. If I rushed, if I made a single mistake, she'd see it coming. And I needed her to believe I was nothing more than a grieving widow, broken, vulnerable, looking for closure. So I played the part. I found a contact, someone who owed Marcus a favor. a low-level street dealer who had worked with Jada's people before. I met him in a bar on the south side of the city, a dingy little dive with sticky floors and a broken jukebox playing old rock songs. He was already drunk when I got there. "Claire Caldwell," he slurred, shaking his head. "Shit, I heard about Marcus. I'm real sorry." I slid into the booth across from him, folding my hands neatly on the table. "Thanks, Denny." He took a swig of his beer. "What are you doing here?" I didn't waste time. "I need an introduction to Jada Monroe." Denny choked on his drink, coughing violently before looking at me like I'd lost my mind. "The fuck did you just say?" "I need to meet her," I repeated calmly. His eyes darted around the bar, like he expected someone to be listening. "Are you crazy?" He leaned in, lowering his voice. "You don't just meet Jada. People like us? We don't even look at her unless she lets us." I tilted my head. Marcus looked at her. Denny flinched. "Yeah, well, Marcus was sleeping with her," I finished for him. "Silence." Denny shifted uncomfortably, refusing to meet my gaze. "Look, Claire, whatever the hell you're thinking, let it go. This isn't your world." "It is now," he exhaled, rubbing a hand over his face. "Jesus Christ." I leaned forward. "You owe Marcus. I'm calling in that favor." Denny swore under his breath. He looked at me for a long time, debating whether he wanted to get involved in whatever this was. But in the end, he did what all cowards do when backed into a corner. He folded. "The meeting." Denny came through. 3 nights later, I was sitting in a high-end nightclub, sipping expensive whiskey and waiting for Jada Monroe. The club was nothing like the dive bars I was used to. This place was money, gold-trimmed decor, private lounges, a dance floor packed with women in designer dresses and men in tailored suits. And at the top of it all, overlooking her empire, was Jada. She sat in a VIP booth, surrounded by security, dressed in a deep red gown that clung to her body in all the right places. She exuded power, confidence, control. She was the type of woman men worshipped and feared in equal measure. And I hated her. One of her men escorted me to the booth. I kept my posture relaxed, my expression neutral, even as my pulse pounded against my ribs. Jada barely spared me a glance. "I know who you are," she said, swirling the drink in her hand. "The grieving widow." I gave her a tight smile. "And I know who you are." That got her attention. She set her drink down, tilting her head. "Interesting," she mused. "Most women in your position would be afraid of me." I lifted my chin. "I don't scare easily." Jada smirked. "No, I suppose you don't." I could feel her sizing me up, trying to decide whether I was worth her time. I let her. I needed her to be intrigued. "I have something that belonged to Marcus," I said, keeping my voice steady. "Something you might be interested in." Jada arched a perfectly shaped brow. "And what would that be?" "A stash of documents," I lied smoothly. "Files, notes. Things Marcus was collecting." I let the words sink in before adding, "About you." For the first time, something flickered in her expression. Interest. Suspicion. Curiosity. She leaned forward, resting her elbows on the table. "And you're offering these to me? Out of the kindness of your heart." I met her gaze without hesitation. "Let's just say, I have no loyalty to a dead man who lied to me." Jada studied me for a long moment. Then she smiled. And I knew right then and there that she had taken the bait. The trap was set. That night, as I walked out of the club, I knew the first part of my plan had worked. Jada Monroe thought she had me figured out. She thought I was a grieving widow, broken and angry, looking to rid myself of my dead husband's mistakes. But she was wrong. Because I wasn't broken. I wasn't angry. I was a woman with nothing left to lose. And Jada had just made the biggest mistake of her life. She had let me in. And I was going to use that to destroy her. Chapter 3, Seduction and Sin. I had always known the power of seduction. It wasn't about beauty, it was about control. The ability to shift the energy in a room, to pull attention toward you like gravity. It was the art of making someone want you, even when they knew they shouldn't. And Jada Monroe? She was a master at it. But she wasn't the only one. The first time I met her in that club, I had played my part well. I let her see what she wanted to see, an angry widow, bitter and betrayed, looking for payback. I made her believe I was desperate, vulnerable, easy to manipulate. And that's why she took the bait. Jada had agreed to meet with me again, privately. And that's when I knew I had her. But I had to be careful. Because as much as I was playing her, she was playing me too. The private invitation. Jada's call came 2 days later. I was sitting on my couch, replaying Marcus's messages in my head when my phone buzzed. The number was blocked, but I already knew who it was. I answered. Hello. Tomorrow night, Jada said. Her voice was smooth, controlled. Like silk wrapped around steel. 8 o'clock. You'll be picked up. I leaned back against the cushions. No location? You don't ask questions, she replied. You just show up. And then the line went dead. I stared at the screen, my heart pounding. This was it. The real game had begun. A ride to hell. The next night, right on schedule, a sleek black SUV pulled up outside my house. I had dressed carefully, something elegant but understated. A black dress, high-slit, deep neckline. Not too revealing, but just enough to make Jada look. Just enough to make her wonder. The driver, a stone-faced man in a tailored suit, held the door open for me. I slid inside, the leather seats cool against my skin. No one spoke. We drove for nearly 30 minutes, leaving the city behind. Streetlights turned to empty roads. Empty roads turned to a long, winding driveway lined with towering trees. And then finally we arrived. The estate was massive. A modern glass mansion sitting atop a hill, glowing under the moonlight. Security cameras. Armed guards. A fortress disguised as luxury. I stepped out of the SUV, heels clicking against the stone driveway. The night air was thick with humidity, the scent of jasmine and something expensive lingering in the breeze. The front doors opened before I could knock. And there she was, Jada Monroe, standing at the top of the marble staircase, watching me like a predator watches its prey. The dance begins. She was breathtaking. She wore a silk robe, loosely tied at the waist, revealing smooth golden brown skin. Her hair was pinned up, accentuating the sharpness of her jawline, the fullness of her lips. I could see the amusement in her eyes, the way she was already testing me. I didn't flinch. Instead, I smiled. Slow. Controlled. Nice place, I said, letting my gaze drift around the grand foyer. Is this where you seduce all your enemies? Jada smirked. Only the interesting ones. She turned, gliding up the stairs, expecting me to follow. So I did. The upstairs was even more extravagant. Floor-to-ceiling windows, expensive art, dim lighting that made everything feel intimate. She led me to a sitting room, where a bottle of wine and two glasses waited. I sat down, crossing my legs. Jada poured the wine, handing me a glass. Her nails, long, painted blood red, brushed against my fingers as I took it. A test. A tease. I met her gaze and took a slow sip. She leaned back against the couch, studying me. So tell me, Claire, her voice was velvet, dripping with curiosity. What do you really want? I tilted my head. Closure. Jada chuckled, taking a sip of her own drink. Closure. Such a beautiful lie. I smirked. And what do you want? She set her glass down, standing up. And then, just like that, she closed the distance between us. One step. Two. Until she was right in front of me, looking down with those dark, knowing eyes. I want to know, she murmured, reaching out, tracing a finger along my collarbone, how much of this is real, and how much is a game? My pulse thrummed. I could feel the heat of her body, the scent of her perfume, vanilla and something dangerously sweet. I let the silence stretch, let the tension build. Then finally I whispered, does it matter? For a split second, something flickered in her eyes. And then she smiled. Predatory. Hungry. And just like that, she leaned in and kissed me. The taste of poison. Her lips were soft. Warm. But the kiss wasn't gentle. It was deliberate. A power play. A challenge. I didn't pull away. I kissed her back, slow and controlled, keeping the pace lazy, teasing. Letting her think she had the upper hand. Because I needed her to want me. I needed her to trust me. I needed her to let me in. Jada's hands moved to my waist, pulling me closer. I let her. I let her press me against the couch, let her lips trail down my neck. And the whole time, I kept my mind sharp. Because this wasn't about passion. This wasn't about lust. This was about revenge. Lies in the dark. We ended up in her bedroom. The sheets were soft, the room dimly lit. Jada's body was warm against mine, her breathing slow, steady. She had fallen asleep eventually, exhaustion pulling her under. But I didn't sleep. I lay there, staring at the ceiling, my mind racing. Because I wasn't just here to seduce her. I was here to destroy her. Carefully, silently, I slipped out of bed. Her phone was on the nightstand. Unlocked. She trusted me already. I picked it up, scrolling through her messages. Scanning for anything I could use against her. And then, I found it. A message thread. One name stood out. Marcus. My breath caught. The last message was dated the night before he died. You made your choice, detective. Now you deal with the consequences. My stomach twisted. and then a second message. From her. Clean it up. I swallowed hard, my pulse hammering in my ears. Jada hadn't just slept with Marcus. She had ordered his death. I clenched the phone in my hand. And for the first time since this all started, I felt something dangerously close to fear. Because I wasn't just playing with fire. I was drowning in gasoline. And Jada Monroe was the match. Chapter 4, The Trunk of No Return. I stood in the dim glow of Jada Monroe's bedroom, her phone clutched tightly in my hand. The air was thick with the scent of sweat and perfume, the remnants of what had happened between us. But I wasn't thinking about that. I was staring at the last message Marcus had ever received. Clean it up. There was no denying it now. Jada had ordered his death. I felt something coil in my stomach, rage, grief, something cold and merciless blooming inside me. I had known deep down that she was responsible. But knowing it in theory and seeing it in black and white were two different things. Jada Monroe had taken my husband from me. And now, I was going to take everything from her. But first, I had to get out of here alive. The game of deception. I put the phone back exactly where I had found it. Then I turned, slipping back into bed beside her. Jada stirred slightly, shifting in her sleep, her body warm against mine. If she woke up and saw me standing over her, things would go south fast. So I played my part. I ran my fingers down her arm, slow, lazy, like a lover waking from a dream. She made a soft sound, half asleep. MMM, what time is it? I pressed a kiss to her shoulder. Too early to move, I murmured. Jada sighed, sinking back into the pillows. Good. I let her fall back into sleep, my own body still tense, my pulse thrumming against my ribs. I could feel the weight of her beside me, the warmth of her skin. She had no idea. No idea that I had just uncovered her secret. No idea that by this time tomorrow, she'd be gone. Dead. Sinking to the bottom of a lake. And I'd be the one to put her there. A fatal invitation. The next morning, Jada sat across from me at breakfast, sipping her coffee like she didn't have a care in the world. She wore a loose silk robe, her legs crossed, her posture relaxed. The queen of her empire. Completely unaware that she was living on borrowed time. I like having you around, she said, eyeing me over the rim of her cup. I smiled. Do you? She smirked. I'm not the sentimental type, but you're different. I let my expression soften, pretending to hesitate. I like being here. Jada reached out, tracing a finger along the back of my hand. Stay a little longer. It was a test. She wanted to see how deep she had me. I let my lips part slightly, my breath hitching just enough to seem real. I can't. Jada's brow lifted. Why not? I lowered my gaze like I was suddenly shy. I have something I need to do. Jada studied me, searching for a lie. Something or someone? I looked up, locking eyes with her. Do you want me to stay? Her lips curled into a slow smile. If I said yes? I reached across the table, my fingers brushing over hers. Then I'd have to come back. It was too easy. Jada thought she had me wrapped around her finger. And that's exactly what I wanted her to think. The setup. I waited until I was back in my own car before making the call. Owens answered on the second ring. You have a plan, he asked. I have a location, I corrected. Owens exhaled. Shit. You're really doing this. Do you have the car? A pause. Then. Yeah. It's waiting. I gripped the steering wheel. Good. We do it tonight. Owens hesitated. Claire, listen. No, I cut him off. She ordered his death, Owens. You saw the messages. She killed my husband. And now, I'm taking her off the board. Silence. Then finally. All right. The Last Supper. That night, I invited Jada to dinner. I made it special, something intimate, just the two of us. A quiet, secluded spot by the lake, a place I knew well. A place where no one would hear her scream. She arrived in a sleek black dress, looking effortlessly lethal. Fancy, she murmured as she stepped out of the car. What's the occasion? I smiled, taking her hand. Us. She smirked. I liked the sound of that. She had no idea. We ate. Drank. Laughed. And then, when the moment was right, I leaned in, brushing my lips against her ear. Come with me, I whispered. Jada's eyes darkened. Where? I took her hand, guiding her toward the car parked at the edge of the lot. The trunk was already open. Waiting. I pulled her closer, kissing her slow, deep, letting her fall into it. And then, I moved fast. I shoved her backward, slamming her into the trunk. She let out a sharp gasp, eyes wide with shock. But I didn't hesitate. I grabbed the tire iron from the side and swung. The metal connected with her skull with a sickening crack. Jada collapsed. I stared down at her unconscious body, my breath coming fast, my heart pounding. She was still alive, but not for long. I grabbed her legs, hoisting her fully into the trunk. And then, without a second thought, I slammed it shut. The drive to death. The road to the lake was dark, empty. I drove in silence, my hands steady on the wheel. The weight in the trunk barely shifted, barely made a sound. Jada was still out cold. Good. The less she struggled, the easier this would be. I pulled up to the dock, the water black and endless beneath the moonlight. The air was cold, the wind whispering through the trees. I stepped out, gripping the keys tightly. And then I walked to the trunk. For a long moment, I just stood there listening. Nothing. Then, a faint groan. She was waking up. I took a deep breath, then pressed the button. The trunk popped open. Jada blinked up at me, dazed, confused. And then realization. She tried to move, but she was still too weak. Claire? Her voice was hoarse. I stared down at her, my expression unreadable. Good night, Jada. Then, before she could react, I grabbed the car, shoving it forward. The tires groaned as they rolled over the wooden planks. The nose of the car tipped downward, and then, splash, the water swallowed it whole. Jada's muffled screams barely reached the surface. And then silence. I exhaled slowly, watching the ripples fade. It was over. Marcus was avenged. Jada Monroe was gone. And I was finally free. Chapter 5, The Last Lie. The lake was calm again. The water had swallowed Jada Monroe, dragging her to the depths where she would never return. I stood there for a long time, watching the ripples fade, my breath steady. She was gone. And it was over. The woman who had taken my husband from me, the woman who had turned my world upside down, was dead. And I had been the one to do it. The weight of it settled over me, thick and heavy. But there was no regret. No guilt. Only silence. And then, my phone rang. I stiffened. No one should be calling me. Not now. I pulled it out, my fingers tightening when I saw the name on the screen. Owens. I took a deep breath and answered. It's done. Silence on the other end. Then. Claire. Owens said, his voice low. You need to get the fuck out of there. Now. My stomach twisted. What are you talking about? Owens exhaled sharply. They found the car. The blood drained from my face. What? They fucking found it, Claire. His voice was urgent now. They drained the lake this morning. There's no body. My pulse roared in my ears. No body. The words repeated in my head, over and over again like a curse. Jada Monroe was supposed to be dead. But if there was no body, then where the fuck was she? The ghost who wouldn't die. I drove. Fast. Reckless. My hands clenched so tightly around the steering wheel that my knuckles turned white. This wasn't possible. I had seen the car go under. I had heard the water rush in, had watched as the last air bubbles broke the surface. There was no way, no fucking way, she could have survived. Unless. My stomach churned. Had she gotten out? Had someone pulled her from the wreckage before it was too late? Or worse. Had she planned for this? I forced the thought down, gritting my teeth. No. Jada had been caught off guard. I had seen it in her eyes. She hadn't expected me to turn on her. She hadn't been ready. So how the fuck was she still alive? My phone buzzed again. Another call. I hit the button on my car's dashboard, answering without looking. Talk. Owens's voice came through, tight with tension. I just got word from one of my guys on the inside. Claire, you're being watched. I swallowed hard. By who? A pause. Then. Jada's people. Hunted. I pulled into my driveway, scanning the street before cutting the engine. The neighborhood was quiet. Too quiet. I sat there for a moment, my fingers drumming against my thigh. Owens's warning echoed in my mind. Jada's people were watching me. Which meant they knew. They knew I had taken her. They knew I had tried to kill her. And if they knew that, then they also knew she was still alive. I stepped out of the car, my muscles coiled tight. The wind had picked up, rustling through the trees, carrying the scent of rain. I walked up the steps to my house, keys clenched between my fingers like a weapon. And then I felt it, that unmistakable weight of someone watching me. I turned sharply, my eyes scanning the street. Nothing. No movement. No cars that didn't belong. But I wasn't stupid. Just because I couldn't see them didn't mean they weren't there. I took a slow breath, then stepped inside, locking the door behind me. The house was dark. Still. The air thick with the kind of quiet that felt unnatural. I walked through the rooms, checking the locks, scanning the windows. My instincts screamed at me. Something was off. Then, my phone buzzed again. No caller ID. I hesitated, and then slowly I answered. I didn't get a chance to speak. A voice slithered through the line. Lo. Amused. Miss me, baby? The breath left my lungs. It was her. Jada Monroe. Alive. I gripped the phone so tightly it creaked. Where the fuck are you? Jada chuckled softly. Close. My pulse hammered. I put you in the fucking lake. You did. Her voice was smooth. And yet here I am. I swallowed hard. Ow! Another chuckle. Now, Claire, you didn't really think it would be that easy, did you? I gritted my teeth. What do you want? There was a pause. Then. You. My stomach twisted. Jada's voice dropped lower, almost playful. You made a move, Claire. You put me in that trunk. You tried to kill me. I stayed silent. Jada continued. I should return the favor. I forced my voice to stay steady. Then why haven't you? Another pause. Then. Because you intrigue me. A chill slid down my spine. I have a proposition, Jada murmured. A chance to fix what you broke. I clenched my jaw. I don't make deals with dead women. Jada laughed. Oh, sweetheart. I'm very much alive. And trust me, the only way you walk away from this is if I say so. I swallowed hard. What do you want? Silence. Then, finally, come see me. The line went dead. I stared at my phone, my pulse roaring in my ears. She was alive. She was watching me. And now she was waiting. The final confrontation. I went. I had no choice. She had left me no choice. The location she sent was an abandoned warehouse on the east side of the city. The kind of place where people disappeared and were never found. I walked inside, my heart hammering. Jada was waiting. She stood in the center of the room, dressed in black, her hair slicked back, a small smirk playing at her lips. I didn't hesitate. I pulled my gun. She didn't even blink. You won't pull that trigger, she murmured. I stepped closer, aiming at her head. Try me. Jada tilted her head. If you wanted me dead, I'd still be in that lake. She was right. And I fucking hated it. I gritted my teeth. What the fuck do you want? Jada took a slow step toward me. I want to make you an offer. I didn't lower the gun. Why the fuck would I work with you? Jada smiled. Because I know you, Claire. You're not just some grieving widow. You're something else. Something darker. I swallowed hard. Jada's voice softened. You felt it, didn't you? When you shoved me into that trunk. When you watched that car sink. She took another step closer. You liked it. My breath hitched. Jada leaned in, her lips brushing my ear. I could use someone like you. My grip on the gun wavered. Jada reached out, gently pushing the barrel down. I'm offering you something better than revenge, she whispered. I'm offering you power. I should have pulled the trigger. I should have ended it right there. But I didn't. Because for the first time I realized. Maybe she was right. Maybe I wasn't the woman I thought I was. Maybe. I was something much, much worse.